We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Well, there's an alignment, you know, and people want to compartmentalize the alignment. And the truth of the matter is literally being, it sounds cliche, but like being who you are and honoring that and serving yourself is the alignment. And when you start to honor yourself and your highest being, then everything in the universe is going to do the same thing, because it's, you're showing it. This is how I, this is what it looks like. This is who I am. It's like, you can't meet your mate without being who you are. You can't find that perfect job if you're not like honest about who, what you want to do or who you are. Everything starts with you. And if you are like not serving yourself in that way, the universe is going to send you bullshit.
Hi, I'm Rachel Hollis, and this is my podcast. I spend so many hours of every single week reading and listening to podcasts and watching YouTube videos and trying to find out as much as I can about the world around me. And that's what we do on this show. We talk about everything, life and how to be an entrepreneur. What happened to dinosaurs? What's the best recipe for fried chicken? What's the best plan for intermittent fasting? What's going on with our inner child? How's therapy working out for you? Whatever it is my guests are into, I want to unpack it so that we can all understand. These are conversations. This is information for the curious. This is the Rachel Hollis Podcast. First, I would love to just hear, how do y'all know each other? How did this magic start to happen?
Do you want to tell our conception story, my love?
Once upon a time, we were pregnant around the same time, and we have one mutual friend, and we have no other friends with kids. You know, I think I got pregnant when I was like 25. Erica was 26, and none of our friends, either of our friends, had kids. And, you know, it was the early part of motherhood. I had seen her on Instagram. I knew we had a mutual friend, and I had other friends who had met her, but I hadn't met her. And because it's Instagram, I made a bunch of assumptions. I saw her get, like, proposed to at her baby shower. I was like, she's doing it right. I was unmarried and having a baby, and she was like, she looks rich. You know, like,
the like thing, Instagram does.
Yeah, like Instagram does, tells you lies. And then somewhere not very far, because we actually grew up in the same part of Los Angeles in the Valley, she had also seen me on Instagram, except I was like poolside with an infant at the Roosevelt with a...
Wait, let me interrupt here. She was poolside at the Roosevelt Hotel in like a string bikini with a six pack and her maybe 3-month-old daughter on her hip holding a glass of champagne.
I hate that.
I was 20,000 months pregnant in my home, obviously a little bit miserable because we all know how that is. And also just battling with like, who the fuck am I now?
Right.
And I'm like, wow, she's really living her life. I kind of hated her because she was really a reflection of everything I didn't think I could be or have anymore. And so I was like, who the hell does she think she is?
Yes.
But then I was also like, where is she? My friend had actually posted her again. And I was like, listen, where is this mommy friend of the group that I have never met? And she was like, oh, that's Jamila. We're actually going out tonight. You should come meet up. So I called my mom, dropped my 3-month-old daughter off at her house, which she definitely was like, where are you going? Your daughter's 3 months. And I was like, I'll be right back. Pumped in the car in front of the bar, went in to go find my future platonic wife, which was totally out of the ordinary for me. Like that had not been how I'd ever made friends before, but I was extremely desperate. I felt super isolated as a first-time mother with no mommy friends. And so I made it my mission to go in there that night. I knew I had a limited amount of time to go find Jamila. And thankfully, she's the kindest, sweetest person ever. And I just cornered her in the bathroom and was like, hey, I heard you have a baby. And she was like, I didn't know that she had seen me before. So she was like, yeah, I do. And I was like, we should have a play date. And so we had a play date like 2 days later.
Which is hilarious. With 3-month-olds. Which is
right.
Hilarious.
Which we all know, like, that's not a play
date. So to be clear, it was a play date for us.
For you guys, yeah.
And I vividly remember going over there and the kids could like barely keep their heads up, but they were like, how's motherhood going? It's like, it's great. I'd love it. I was like, me too. I'm so happy. You know, it was pretty surface, but I think, and that was, we didn't hang out for like maybe a year, like maybe one other time, two other times, but you know, we had mutual friends. And I think maybe like around two or three years later, I had broken up with my child's father, and I had heard that so had she, and I was like, oh wow, like not only were the only the moms in the mom group, I'm like, oh, but now she's going through the same shit that I'm going through. And I was like, I didn't want to, I wasn't happy, but kinda. So I had invited her to, I think, my daughter's third birthday, kind of to rekindle our little, you know, mom love. And you want to tell this part of the story?
Yeah, so during that time, I obviously had become a single parent. Really surprisingly, my partner decided to have a baby while we were together with someone else.
Interesting. interesting choice.
Yeah, it was an interesting choice, a very shocking choice because I was planning my wedding at the time. Oh, and so it was really devastating for me. And so after I, you know, cried it out and, you know, lost 20 pounds in depression, I had joined Tinder because my friends were like, you got to get back out there. I'd been in my relationship for like 7 years. Dating had seemed like such a foreign concept to me at that point. I was a wife in my mind, you know. And so I joined Tinder and, you know, I was like, you know what, this is, as I started swiping and meeting new people, I was like, you know, this is such a unique opportunity or an exciting opportunity for me to really explore what it is that I really want, like sexually, dating. And so I happened to fall upon a married couple and I was having this experience with them. But again, no mommy friends, no one to really share this experience with, feeling very ashamed because I'd never done anything like this before, but also extremely excited because it was so different for me. And so when she invited me to her daughter's birthday, I remembered that picture of Jamila and I was like, this is the mommy. She can handle this story. I knew it. And so I was excited to go and tell her like, yeah, so I'm single now. And guess what? This is happening. Also, by the way, another, I think, divine moment in our first meeting, which again, I'm like, I don't even know what inspired me to go to this bar and meet a stranger. But again, also knowing when I went to that birthday party, I was going to ask her to start a podcast. And I had been listening to murder mystery podcasts, started to kind of explore single motherhood podcasts. There were really none. And I just felt like there was definitely none that I felt I could see myself in. They're all very married and just scratching the surface of like my experiences that I was actually going through at the time. And so I told her, hey, I'm single. Also, I've been seeing this married couple. And she was like, what?
I was immediately like, oh, she's more my people than I thought. I was like, perfect. And then she asked me, do you want to start a podcast? And I was like, what is that? Like a radio show? And she was like, yeah. And I asked her, are you going to tell the story about your couple? Because I only have two modes, on or off. And she was like, I can't get fired. And I was like, well, me either. Fuck it. You know? And for me, it was like someone at school asking you to join the soccer club. You know, I was just like happy to be doing something with someone. I was like, this is going to be fun. Like I didn't know her very well. We weren't like close friends, but I know we were having similar experiences. And this story was just like kind of like, I felt like we were both in a place in our lives where we were just like literally like, fuck it. Like we can do whatever we want. We've had children. We've gotten past these breakups kind of. And, you know, now we're just going to do whatever we want, tell everybody. And I think
I don't think we knew we were going to tell everybody.
Well,
I didn't think anyone was. I don't know what I thought. I just thought we were going to press record and our friends were going to listen.
And that's what we did. You know, I think our first episode is just it was a test. But then it was an hour and a half, and we're like, you know, let's just put this out.
Yeah.
And you know, we left it there for months. And like, I think in the third month, I went and checked the analytics just because for the fuck of it. And I called her and I was like, they said there's 10,000 people listening. Like, do you know 10,000 people? Because I don't. And I was like, I think the site is glitching. But then people started, you know, other moms were like, oh, you know, you smoke cannabis? Oh, you're dating? I thought I couldn't. You know, like, I'm smoking in my garage right now. And it kind of sparked something that motivated us to continue to tell, to be brutally honest. And, you know, 5 years later, there's more moms who make bad choices than we thought.
Do you really think they're bad choices?
Or no.
It's just a catchphrase.
I mean, even looking back now, like, you know, for some people, telling a story like that would seem so taboo or shameful, especially as a mother, especially as a woman. But, you know, honesty is really what brings, like, exposing yourself, being vulnerable is really what brings people together and heals people. And I have no regrets.
And I think honesty has been such a medicine for us as women, as mothers, as just humans in general.
Manifestors.
So, yeah. So it's kind of addicting now.
How did people at first react? Like, did you have family or anyone who was, do you have people who are super supportive of the honesty or people who were like, what are you doing?
It was definitely strangers who were super supportive.
Yeah.
Everybody we knew was like, you know, I think I would like bring it back. Brands are not going to do this. Your daughters are this, or like, you know, it's just, you know, everyone has an opinion. And we didn't. We kind of like, we stayed true to who we were, and we stayed true to, you know, our purpose. And our purpose is to just be who we are.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful that there's many a times we called each other like, I think you should do this alone. My grandmother told me she's going to take me off the will.
True story.
Oh, no. Well, what's so crazy is that when friends or family or society or whatever has an issue with your honesty, what they're asking you to do is to not be yourself. Show up, put yourself out there, try and have a brand, try and have a business, but just as long as you aren't 100% yourself in this moment, then we'll like you. And so how did you guys figure out that very delicate road to walk? Or were you just like, fuck
it? Well, I think that, I think we said, fuck it.
Yeah.
And we've been able to partner with brands that understand our voice. I think that there's been adjustment periods of like, okay, maybe I don't have to share all of these things, or maybe, you know, we have our Patreon that is exclusive to, you know, our tribe that really wants to get into the nitty gritty of our stories that we share there. Honestly, like I feel like the gift of us and the gift that we are able to give our audience and they give back to us is the honesty, is saying the thing, mm-hmm. you know? And I think brands are, you know, growing and getting on board in certain ways. I see like a lot of wellness people in the wellness space, as we are, talking about these type of things, talking mm-hmm. about these type of experiences, and realizing that alternative medicine is extremely healing. We talk about, people will admit that they've been addicted to prescription pills, and that doesn't stop a brand from partnering with them.
You're so right.
You know? And so it's like, I've talked about this healing experience I had with Nature's Medicine, and this makes no sense.
Exactly. You're so right.
I think there's a narrative that's switching. There's still a lot more work to do. And even in the space of, you know, we're moms that smoke weed, and we've been very honest about that. And, it's a flower, and we talk about this with our children. Like, we don't hide our consumption from our kids. They're both 8 years old. They've known we've smoked since before, I don't know, like forever, pretty yeah. much. And because of that, there's no strangeness.
Right.
They don't care.
Right.
They don't
right.
even think twice about
well,
it.
Well, and you think of like how many kids are like, it's mommy's juice. Like, it's the same thing. So with normalized for moms to drink to be able to get through it. But then I could get on a soapbox all day about things that are natural that are outlawed, and then things that are so bad for us,
like
that
the
everyone
food?
Just accepts.
Like, yeah. like everything
like
in
everything
the supermarket.
In the world.
Like every processed
everything
item
in
the
world. Yeah, exactly.
I also feel like when you are purpose-driven, like your road is divinely aligned. And I really think like, you know, us meeting was divine. A lot of the things that we've birthed together are divine and, you know, maybe untraditional. But I also think like as women, when you tell your truth, we're so powerful that our roads open up in front of us. And so when you're supposed to be doing the work and you're supposed to be making changes and you're supposed to be changing people's perspectives and you commit to breaking archaic stereotypes, particularly for moms and particularly for women, I feel like spirit kind of says, like, you know, makes people get it.
Yeah.
And I think when you are a thought leader, when you're a change maker, if everybody likes it, you're not doing it right.
Yes.
If a brand isn't saying no.
If a brand isn't saying no, then right. You're not doing the right, right thing. Then you're doing what everybody else is doing and something's got to give.
Yeah.
I have a friend who has a vacation house. Whenever she's not staying there on vacation, which is pretty often because she's a mama with kids who works in a totally different city, she rents that house out on Airbnb. And she has absolutely loved the process. It's a way for her family to thrive, both by having a place to go to and by getting additional income. And it's been super easy for her to manage because she does everything online. While you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle, and it's a great way to earn some extra money, just like my friend. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Guys, no two listeners of the show are exactly alike, which means that no two vacations you take are going to be exactly alike either. And if you're looking for a place that will serve all of you, Texas has a vast landscape of cultures, regions, destinations, and activities that allow for an infinite number of different travel experiences. I love Texas so much, I moved my family there for 5 years. Because here's the deal, Texas has it all. Are you a beach person? We got you. If you love a rugged vacation, not my jam, but there's plenty of campgrounds, hiking trails, and state parks galore. My favorite part about Texas? The food. It is the thing I miss the absolute most. Whether you love barbecue or Tex-Mex or just want to be in cities that take their food very seriously, you can enjoy live music, visit internationally recognized art museums, and check out thrilling cowboy experiences. Visit traveltexas.com/get-your-own to get the only trip to Texas that matters, yours. That's traveltexas.com/get-your-own. Did you guys have that? Was that always a part of you growing up, or is that something you feel like you've evolved to as you've gotten older?
I think Mila's probably been the more beat to, like, riding to the beat of her own drum. I think for me, I grew up in LA. I've been an actress most of my life. There are certain boxes that I've always felt I had to fit into. On top of just like feeling like I had to abide by some sort of expectation of my family, I fell into those traps. And even it really came to be even more so. And what I noticed was when I had my child, I was like, I had always smoked weed prior to that. But the moment I got pregnant, I was like, oh, well, that's going to end. And then I had her and I was like, oh, I can't do that anymore. Like, oh, I can't. I decided I wasn't allowed to do certain things anymore. So that is why, like, when I met Jamila, like, it was really like a, she reminded me of, you can still be a mom and not let these parts of you die.
Right. Well, it's such a weird, I mean, I love that you said, I think when you were pregnant that you were sort of questioning, like, who am I now? Mm. For some of us, I think that happens when you're pregnant or maybe when you have a 3-month-old, and sometimes that's like a 10-year-old and you're finally coming back up for air and you're like, what is this life? Mm. What am I doing? For me, I felt that so much, especially in the last 10 years of, I sort of bought into all of these ideas of who my family of origin and culture said I was supposed to be. And for the first time, even like going on a retreat to do plant medicine was the wildest thing I have ever. It was so outlandish. And so I know I'm like the babiest country mouse ever.
No.
It was huge for me.
That's a big deal. People
it was,
don't do that.
Right. No. Like, but to have experiences and push yourself past who you were before you were pregnant and start to try and redefine, I'm not just any one thing. which most of the time moms are put into, like, you are a mom and this is what society says that is. How, what did that look like for you guys? Like, how did you, if someone's listening to this right now and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm in this. I don't know who the hell I am now that I have this kid. How do you figure that out?
I think you have to fight ferociously for your life. I think you have to be willing to get uncomfortable and think outside the box and know that people are going to tell you that you're doing it wrong. But you have to be so committed to your own pleasure and your own peace and your own happiness and exploring what that is and what that looks like at any cost. And sometimes that means telling friends, hey, I know you know this other version of me, this old version, but this is who I am now. And if you don't fuck with it, it's cool, but I'm gonna hit you later.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've done that. And I've literally had this conversation. Like, right now, I like myself more than I ever have before. And if you don't like this version of me, that's fine. But we can get the kids together sometimes. But for right now, I'm gonna back out peacefully.
Right.
And it's worked for me. And I think it's uncomfortable. And sometimes we don't want to have those conversations, or we don't want to look like the mom who had the threesome or the mom who smokes weed, or, you know, even for me, like, there's certain merch that I won't wear into my daughter's school. But then I'm like, I'm a superstar. I'm a fucking rock star. You know, I've always kind of been like a rebel with a cause, and I am the cause. Because I...
God, that's good. That's a good line. That's a good line.
I am who I am. And, you know, sometimes I've definitely wished I could be different, but I literally cannot. So it's just like, hey, I might be dancing topless at the pool party. I might be, you know, whatever it may be. It doesn't, like, you, like, if you are judging me based on these very small portions of me, then that's more a reflection of you than it is to me.
Right.
And unfortunately, I'm sorry. Oh, unfortunately, women and moms, we've been so tricked into believing that we're supposed to fit into this box. A part of the resentment of that is kind of projecting it on each other.
Amen.
You know what I mean?
All day.
It's like, oh, I'm not having fun, so you can't.
I mean, and this goes back to this when I saw Jamila on the Instagram.
Yes.
I was just like, who does she think she is?
Yes.
And it was because I didn't think I could be that.
Yeah. I just saw this the other day, the idea that jealousy is a signal. Mm-hmm. Like, you would never be jealous of someone who has something you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
So if you feel that in you, it's a great signal. It's a red flag for you to examine and go, what is it about this person that is experiencing something that I don't have? Like, what is she projecting that I wish I had a piece of? And women, I hate to make sweeping generalizations, but we really are so harsh about this, especially mm-hmm. when it comes to how other people parent. Because mm-hmm. it's like, well, I would. Because even you, I'm like, oh my, I've thought 5 times since you told the story about you with a glass of champagne.
I'm going to show you the picture.
Please do with the baby. Because I would have thought the same thing. Like, you're allowed to take a baby to the Roosevelt? Like,
right.
They just let you have the baby there?
Yeah, there was a time.
All these thoughts I had.
There was a time where, like, all the staff knew my kid's name. And I was like, huh. Yeah. Perfect. I was like, perfect.
Doing it right. That's amazing.
I think what we've learned through spending a lot of time with women, because we do women's retreats now.
I saw that on the website.
Yeah, we have another little baby called the Good Vibe Retreat. And so we take not just moms, women. It's just a women's retreat, although there are a lot of mothers that come out of the country. So we go to Costa Rica, Mexico, and a lot of these women have never been away from their kids ever. Their kids are like 15 years old, some
right.
of them. Like, because
right.
the age range is from, I'd say, like 22 to 60 is the age range of our retreats. And never had to make decisions all day long, all the time. Like, literally can't relinquish control. And so they come to our retreat and everything's planned for them, because that's the goal too, is to kind of like just lay down the bags and just exist for 5 days.
Yeah.
Let us handle everything for you. Like, don't ask when the appointment is. You'll get a text. Relax,
yeah.
you know? And a lot of these women have never spent time by themselves to even ask themselves certain questions. And I think that as women, mothers, we make a lot of excuses. And this is not to, because I think this is a triggering topic for women that don't have a lot of support, right? They're like, well, I can't. I don't have a nanny. I don't have a family. I don't have these things. And it's like, yes, all those things are true, But if you really want to dive in and figure out who the fuck you are, you'll figure it out. Just like you figured everything else out as a mother, you will figure it out and your kid will be okay. Especially married people. I always like married people. I'm like, you have a partner in the home. You've obviously, I hope you trust him.
Right.
Leave him with, the kid might not shower for 3 days.
Right.
Oh, well.
They will survive.
That's the thing is, it's like, there are people who have a partner that thinks that if they're watching their child, they're babysitting. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I'm babysitting. You're not babysitting, bitch. This is like, I'm not babysitting when I have these kids.
Right.
So, but then the other thing is like, it's also mothers especially who are trying to control how that partner shows up with the kid. As long as the kid is alive, I mean, yes, it's going to maybe be a
mess.
It's
not going to be your
version.
It's not
going to be pretty, yes.
It's not going to be your version.
But who cares? Yeah. At least you'll be good.
Yes,
at absolutely. Least you're going to go fill your cup and figure it out, and you have to let it go.
Yeah.
Because I've been that mom as well, too, like wanting to control the thing, everything. Yeah. Did she take a shower? Yeah. Did she eat? She's not even supposed to eat that.
Right.
You know, like, yeah. She has piano class. You miss piano class. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But you're on a tropical island and like living your best life. So just go have that moment. How did you guys get into doing retreats? Where did that come from?
Honestly, like I said, us meeting was divine, and like her telling me that threesome story was divine and like this podcast was divine. It was just kind of like, I really do feel like when you start to choose yourself, like the universe opens up and conspires in your favor. And we got this book deal because we just released a book last week called A Good Mom's Guide to Making Bad Choices.
Yes.
But, you know, that was kind of like divine too. And I was like, I can't believe someone's giving us a book deal, like HarperCollins. Mm-hmm. And then we made this choice. We're like, we have to go and write this book in 2 weeks. And
that was stupid.
And then, the dumbest shit we ever thought. But we had this excuse to go away for 2 weeks.
Yes.
We're writing a book. We're working. So we can be moms who take 2 weeks off. Literally, if the book hadn't happened, we would have never given ourselves permission to take a 2-week break. We literally went on Airbnb, found the most rural places in the deepest of the jungles, and we're like, these are the places we're going to write a book. And when we got there, I remember talking to Erica and being like 5 days in and being like, it took me 5 days to start the vacation. I finally feel relaxed. And yeah. I kept telling her, I was like, oh my God, like moms need to do this more often. I was like, it should be mandatory postpartum, like 6 to 12 months, giving the baby to your partner for 2 weeks minimal and getting the fuck out of there. I was like, we need to normalize this. We need to call it like a postpartum moon or something. I was like, I was really adamant, you know, and we're like, we should bring moms here. We should bring women here. And then literally everything opened up that way. We went to another side of the country. I met a friend I hadn't seen in a long time. She was about to go host a retreat on the other side. And she was like, you guys should host a retreat. And I was like, that's so funny. We've been talking about that. And then I sat down next to someone watching the sunset. And I was like, what do you do here? She's like, well, I've run retreats for the last 10 years. And I was like, huh. And I literally said, I've been looking for you.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how everything works out for us. Like literally, I want this. And then the person that you need to help you do it sits next to you.
Absolutely.
And I'm a friendly bitch. So I'm starting conversations with everybody. What's your name? What high school did you go to? You know, and like we made that decision right then. We booked a ticket to come back before we even left. We had this like money that we had put, you know, got from this book deal that we didn't expect to get. And when we got the book deal, she said, it was like our first big check, you know, and this was like 3 years ago. And she was like, and I told her, this is the first of a bunch of big checks. And she said, yeah. And then we decided to start that retreat there. And in the last year, we've taken over 100 women out of the country and
cool.
done at least 6 retreats.
Oh, rad.
And so it really just like blossomed like that for us.
And honestly, we couldn't have written the book without first doing the retreats. It was almost like, well, you're going to do these retreats with women and be in the trenches with women like you that are not like you, because you need to understand a broader picture of motherhood, not just your own perspective, but really a broader picture of what this looks like, and then you'll write the book.
Absolutely.
Then you'll have the tools to go cater to these women, and you've done enough mushrooms and you've frolicked around naked in the jungle long enough to offer them the gift.
Yeah.
And that's really what it is. It's like we curated a very unique experience that was like, A, nurturing women so they won't have to make any decisions and they can just exist so they can figure out what the fuck they like and use their voice and you know, rebrand themselves if they so choose. But also just like a bunch of unconventional healing that we mistakenly took on that, like, you know, really ignited our healing and our blossoming, and then kind of curated that into an itinerary to offer it to other women so they can like take a stance in their identity and in their existence too. Or else, you know, I think, you know, women need permission to take a break.
Did you guys grow up with this sort of spirituality that you have, or is this something you've learned over time?
You know, my dad is a Christian and he's from the South. And so he grew up going to, you know, church every Sunday, Bible study. And then my mom is like one of those, is like growing up, we would go to church every blue moon. And I always noticed like something's going on.
Yeah.
Like mom's not happy. We're going to church. Because it would always be so random. Like, why do I, like, she'd be waking me up on Sunday morning randomly. She's like, we're going to church. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Why?
What's happening?
You know? But, you know, and then I went to Catholic school. But I honestly, you know, I think because me and my father didn't have a very close relationship growing up, and I saw him be such a devout Christian, and I felt like he was not really, I saw him sin so much. Like, he's a ladies man. Mm-hmm. He wasn't like, it wasn't aligned.
Yeah.
So I kind of started to reject religion. Yeah. I was like, this doesn't make sense. I don't get it. And then I went to Catholic school and it further deepened my distrust.
Yeah.
So at one point I was a self-proclaimed atheist. My mom loved that. I remember her crying like, you don't believe in Jesus. I was like, girl, you didn't talk to me about this man like 3 times. So, but I always did, I think it, and innately know that there was a bigger purpose, a biggerness.
Yeah.
You know, I've always felt things. I've seen things and spirits, even when I was a child, to know that there was something that was bigger. I was like, I'm a witch. I'm a baby witch as a kid, because things would just come up, or like I would just get these confirmations and these knowings.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, I think, fed into me then in college, kind of exploring different types of religions and belief systems. And then I think within our relationship and our spiritual journey and tapping into the retreats and just having such incredible guests on our show has really broadened and opened up my mind into what is it exactly that I believe in. And it's that the God is in within me, you know, and that I am the host.
Right.
You know, and there are bigger things that can kind of activate this host within me, but I don't necessarily believe in, I'm not an organized religion type of gal.
Yeah.
Yeah, same. I think I have a unique experience, because my dad told me really young, like, oh, religion, some man made it up and everybody followed it. And I was like, okay. And I've always kind of like challenged everything. And even as a kid, I've like, you know, I had the Ouija boards. I loved the craft. We're also from the Valley. We're, you know, so it's like, what's your sign? You know, I've always like been a self-proclaimed witch. But I do believe that I went to Catholic school as well, down the street actually. And then, but it wasn't until senior year when we got to study like all religions that I was really intrigued by just the concept of all paths to God. You know, like every religion has all the same shit, but they call it different things.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is rules to scare you and how you're supposed to act or perform. But I do believe with this relationship, I really started to see the power of manifesting in community and just the power of women, like our words, and just through, you know, speaking honestly, the way we were able to like pull things to us, you know, like just without effort. And I was like, oh, this is some other shit.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Were there things that you did to deepen that awareness or that practice in your life?
I think definitely. I think there came a point where we were speaking things so easily into existence, it was scaring us.
Dude, I've just experienced, sorry, I got way too excited. I just experienced something like this recently where there started to be such synchronicity that I actually felt almost like out of control. Like I was like, this shit is not And then I feel like I've pulled myself out of it a little bit. And I'm like, wait, no, wait, just kidding. Go back. I want it again. But it feels almost scary. You're like, this can't be real. How stuff is just flowing.
I feel like also the power, like what I've learned in manifestation is like when you say it out loud and you just genuinely believe it, but you don't think about it too much, that's when it starts to happen. And I think there comes a time in every witch's life where there's so much alignment that you have, like, it's spirit telling you, bitch, yes, you know this is not a coincidence.
Yes.
Now use your motherfucking power.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. It was kind of like the spirit, like, looks you in the face and is like, are you ready? And to this point where sometimes I tell Erica, I'm like, I have an idea, but I'm not going to tell you yet because we don't have time. I was like, I'm not even talking about it because we don't have time for that.
Yes.
But, you know, it's there's this, it's like coming into your power as a woman and you're like, yeah. And you know that your words are powerful and your existence is powerful and, like, you own that shit. Like, that's when the alignment and the magic and, like, you realize, like, there is really no limit to how large you can go.
Mm. I also, just to add to that, I think it's when you stop resisting is when things start to show up.
Do you have an example of that?
You know, like when you're in a relationship that you know you shouldn't be in that doesn't serve you, and then you finally break up with that person, then everything starts to open up for you. I think everyone can relate to that. But people sometimes don't always associate the two with like spirituality or energy, but it totally is. It's the frequency that you're inviting in because you've now released dead frequency.
Yes.
It's the spell with your words. Like, you know when you like have that terrible lover and then you're like, please God, if I'm not, you wait to say it to the very last moment because you know if you say it, it's going to be gone in 5 seconds. Like, please God, if this person is not for me, remove him. And then the next day, it's like, it blows up in your face and you're like, fuck.
Yeah. Yep.
I said, give me 90 days notice. But it's like that.
Yeah. It's worth saying too, for people who haven't considered that before, the energy that you unblock when you end a relationship that you don't even know is there, like the sort of anchor that is or how it holds you back.
Well, there's an alignment, you know, and people want to compartmentalize the alignment. And the truth of the matter is literally it sounds cliche, but like being who you are and honoring that and serving yourself is the alignment. And when you start to honor yourself and your highest being, then everything in the universe is going to do the same thing because you're showing it. This is how I this is what it looks like. This is who I am. It's like you can't meet your mate without being who you are. You can't find that perfect job if you're not like honest about what you want to do or who you are. Everything starts with you. And if you are like not serving yourself in that way, the universe is going to send you bullshit.
Yeah.
I think that because we've been able to invite and call in so many things, I'm hyper aware of how my nervous system reacts to things. And I think if you're listening to, you know this feeling. We just often reject this feeling. Our nervous system, our anxiety, our heartbeat, the way we feel when we leave a person is generally like the biggest clue of whether or not, you know, it's meant to be or it should be. And now because we've had so many amazing successes and we've built this incredible community and, you know, we've had all this alignment, I think that, you know, anything that kind of jeopardizes that, even like I've recently leaving a relationship that I know wasn't really fully like the nervous system. I felt it in my nervous system. And it got to the point where I was like, I have to let this go or it's going to start affecting other parts of my life, like my business.
Yes.
Like my business will suffer. And not even because I'm not going to show up to work or like he's interfering with anything like that.
Yeah.
It was just the flow of my life has been flowing so fucking fabulously. And I'm going against the flow right now.
Yes.
Putting a boulder in the stream.
I'm actually like hyperly, I'm almost like terrified about it. And then sometimes it's like, okay, am I tripping? Like, sometimes relationships are hard, you know, you got to work through shit. Like sometimes it will be uncomfortable. So, but you generally know what is tolerable, what is a you thing, and what is just, this is not, this isn't working.
If someone's listening and they aren't as in touch with their intuition and you talk about this idea of your nervous system, what does that actually feel like for you?
It literally feels, I hold my breath. A lot of like holding my breath, a lot. I know that I get tired. I'm tired a lot. I'm just not, there's like a pep in my step that's not there that normally is.
Yeah.
You know, it's multiple things. It's also just like random thoughts that pop in my head or of like, something's not right. This isn't right. And then I'm like, no, it's right. I'm tripping. And it's like, no, you know. And my friend recently reminded me the other day, she's like, your intuition is pretty spot on. Like, you need to really lead with that and trust that. And I know that. But relationships and just, not even just relationships, just opportunities that you don't want to pass up. You don't want to be passed up, you know, will allow you to kind of bend in ways that you shouldn't bend.
Oh, I mean, when it comes to business, I have asked this question over and over of friends or colleagues of, they'll tell you a story like a business deal that went horribly wrong or a relationship that went horribly wrong. And my favorite question is, when did you first know that something wasn't right? Not when did you make a change? Not when did you talk to them for the first time? When did you know? When did you have the first warning sign in your body that this wasn't okay? And almost everyone will be like,
Early.
Like one weekend.
Right. Yeah. You know it.
I'm a little more like litmus test is a little more shaky when it comes to love. I'm still kind of figuring that part out more and more and refining that. With personal interactions with people and business, I'm a Scorpio and I'm pretty intuitive ever since I was a child. I'm a pretty good read of people or quick. I'm just like, I don't know. I've been wrong. But I think generally it's just a knowing.
Yeah.
It's just a knowing that you just know. It's almost like cellular. Like your ancestors, your people that have experienced this person before are trying to tell you, girl, we met this man. We met this woman. We met this person, this business partner. No. Or like, there's a familiarity where you like, oh my God, I know you.
Right. Well, and then it's hard. And the books come out and all this stuff's going and exploding, whatever. It gets so hard because you get these opportunities placed in front of you that you're like, me? You want to give me this check? And then you don't. And you start to shut off the intuition because you're like, no, this is too good of a, I have a friend who wrote a book and the book got turned into a movie and she was so excited and then it went so wrong. Mm-hmm. It was like the person who adapted it, every single thing about it went bad. Oh, no. And it was years of her life. And you know, when you write a book, you work so hard. Hers is fiction. So she like created these characters and made up the story. And years later, we're sitting having dinner. And she's telling me a whole saga of how wrong it went. And I was like, when did you know? And she was like, the first meeting with this person. Mm. Something was off. And I said, well, why did you go through with it? And she's like, because my book was being made into a movie. Mm. Like, it was too big. It was too exciting. And then it ended up going so horribly wrong. And I guess maybe you need one or two of those moments until you start to have the courage to be like, no, if it's for me, it will be for me. And otherwise I can let this moment pass by.
I feel very blessed and lucky because I have Jamila, you know, it's not one person like in the room.
Although we're both indecisive as fuck.
But I think where I may lack, she kind of picks up the slack. And, you know, we talk about this in our book, our platonic marriage and partnership. And like when we walk into the rooms and where I'm like hypersensitive and she's like, or like vice versa, we're able to kind of like do the checks and balances, check the boxes. And I'm really grateful for that because when it's all on you by yourself, I mean, and granted, listen, I'm a mom. It's all on me by myself all the time, single mom at that. So there are choices I have to make alone. But I think what I've learned through just our relationship in friendship and in business is that like, that's why having strong relationships with, personally, I think women is so important to be able to kind of lean in on each other and say, hey, does this sound right to you? How does this make you feel? How did that make you feel? So that you, because I think a lot of people think they have to do everything by themselves. They have to figure out everything by themselves. They have to make every decision by themselves in business, in all the places and spaces. And so I've just gotten really comfortable leaning in to my tribe, as we call them, and saying, hey, should we do this? What do you think? Like, even literally asking our audience, like, hey, we have this opportunity. We have a really robust Discord community where we lean into them and say, hey, like, what do you think about this? Because what we're building is really important and they are the foundation of it, you know? And so you just don't have to do everything alone. You don't have to figure it out alone, you know? And even deals. Okay, let's have another meeting. I'm going to bring my litmus test with me.
Yeah.
Let's do it one more.
Yeah.
Let me, Jamila, I think you need to be in the room.
We literally made a business decision, like a pretty major business decision yesterday with a pendulum.
And it's a fantastic way to make
and
a decision.
And a quarter flip. And they both were the same. So we're like, okay, let's move forward. Yeah. You know, when I got pregnant with my daughter, I had a tarot reading and I was like, okay, well, she pulled the pregnant card. It's time to go. And I'm like, which is crazy. But like looking back, I was supposed to be a mom because I wouldn't be here. But like sometimes you have to ask the universe and then welcome the way in which those answers show up. And it may not be super typical, but if you ask, you shall receive.
Absolutely. Do you guys get words or messages or visions in dreams? Are you like,
I got a lot more when I was younger, but I still do. Yeah. I still get messages and I have weird, even last night I had a strange dream about like, I have a feeling that someone's going to come back into my life. Mm. I definitely try to pay attention to the dreams because they're what's kind of like when we're really out of control and we're just really allowing things to come.
Yeah. Usually when I'm trying to figure something out, I'll ask guides, like just give it to me in the dreams. Mm-hmm. And it's never that's what made me think of it. It's never very clear. It's never like, yes, Rachel, but it'll be something that sort of helps me figure out, or it'll be a person like, oh, someone will pop in my head. I'm like, oh, I'll talk to Sarah about this. I just had this happen because I'm trying to hire someone. And I went through the proper channels, like put up an ad and do a thing and start interviewing people. And bless, it's my least favorite thing in the entire world. I am not a detail person. So doing 100 interviews to get,
like, I don't know one of them.
Oh, please, anybody? And I was having my sort of nervous system reaction to things is I'll feel super anxious about something that there should be no anxiety for. Mm. Like all of a sudden out of the blue, my body's like physically reacting. And I had this the other day when I was going through these resumes of just like, this is wrong. And I, last night when I was going to sleep, I just asked for it. Like, would you guys guide me in this? Whoever. Would you guide me? Like, would you just tell me? And it's so wild. I didn't even tell you this yet, Jack. I thought of a person that I met years ago. I still like have her on text message, who was a manager at a company I really admired. She was a badass and she did all these things. And I thought of this person and I was like, I'm just gonna text her and see if she has a good lead. I was like, hi, I know you haven't heard from me in years, but I had the instinct that you might know some great freelance project managers. And she was like, oh my God, all day. Like, here's 5 people. They're all killers. They'll destroy it for you. Just send them a text. They're ready to go.
Send them to us too.
And I will. I will.
Whoever you don't hire.
Yes, I will. It's so key. But I was like, oh my. And that's the kind of thing that seems so outlandish. Like, why would I reach out to someone I haven't talked to in forever? But it's those sort of instincts that then the synchronicities happen.
I don't know if you've read this book, but it's like a basic, I'm sure it's like a high school requirement, but this is like how I feel about life. It's called Celestine Prophecy. Huh. And it's really all about like, if you ask, the answers will like just kind of pop up on you. And like, if I stop you and I'm like, hey, I got to tell you something. And then somewhere in the restaurant, a plate breaks. It's important. Or if you say something, if I say something to her and I thought about it earlier, or she just brings it up to me, I'm like, okay, this is important.
Yes.
If I've said something 3 times and I run into someone who, like I said, I'm like, I want to start a retreat. I've been doing retreats for 10 years.
Right.
Boom. You know, like I think we bypass those, again, synchronicities and we push them back. But like, I am the detail bitch. I'm like, is that an owl? What does that mean? Look at that. Is that a grasshopper? Yes.
11:11. Yes. We saw it every day for the past 4 days.
Yes. No, seriously. I am the same way. Any kind of animal that's like showing up out of the ordinary, I'm like, what does this mean?
I'm looking it up on Google. What does this animal represent?
All day long. I do this all day long because I just feel like it's the universe, God, whatever you believe in, it's always talking to us. And if you don't have to buy into every single thing, but yeah, the plate breaks. I'm vibing with you guys. Like this is,
I'm like, oh my God, that was important.
Right. That, yeah. So, this means something.
But and also a testament to like you or just anyone, like, who, if you got that message, someone might say, I can't text her.
Yes.
I haven't talked to her in years. Right. Like, that would be weird.
Right.
And then like, you literally pass up
the this, opportunity.
Your five number one employees.
Yes, yes. And yours as well.
We're going to mess up for everybody. Which is exactly, the thing. It's like, you'd be surprised. Being weird, you might mess it up for the whole team.
Right.
If I had been weird to Erica in the bathroom, like, who knows where I'd be, you know? Who knows? Like, I wouldn't. Like, my dream is to be an author, and I'm an author off this bathroom meet and this threesome. And, like, thank God that, you know, we just walked into the avenue of yes instead of being weird. And I think that's the thing, is like, we've been so conditioned that being weird is human, and actually being human is human. Yeah. Saying hi, text the person, I thought of you. Even like in stranger, like even if I'm in public and I really want to say something to someone, or I'm like, damn, I forgot to compliment her on her dress. Yeah. It annoys me because sometimes you really don't know who's, you know, you might be passing up your best friend or your future lover or whatever it may be, but it's just like, say the thing. Who cares? Like, is someone going to be like, she's not cool? Who cares?
Do you care what people think about you?
I mean, of course, I'm human in ways, but not really.
Yeah.
And mostly because, you know, I've practiced doing that every week for 5 years, which has been incredibly powerful.
Cool.
But also because I realized that I can't please everyone. So I might as well do what the fuck I want.
Yeah.
Whether that like works for everybody or not, people are going to make assumptions about you either way. So it's just kind of like, stand 10 toes down and you.
I think I'm like 80% there.
Yeah.
75.
Yeah. Still, I'm getting better.
Still a level of anxiety that I feel. I think especially stepping into this next season of, you know, where we're at and just, you know, we've done like national television appearances. And I was like, oh, my God, we're like on we're podcasters, you know, we like sit in our little space and we talk our shit. This is different, like opening up the world to, you know, judge and.
Even the book, like, I don't know how you do it. Like, it's so personal.
It's so personal.
And, like, seeing people, like, just share it on stories. And it's, like, something about print.
Yeah. It's forever.
Well, that's... I can go to page 23 and say, you said this.
Right.
And whereas a podcast, I'm like, good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck finding that minute mark.
Right. Yeah, no, there's still a level of I don't give a fuck that I would like to achieve that. But I definitely have increased it over the last 5 years in the space of really just being honest. But, you know, it hasn't come without its challenges and, you know, people not understanding certain perspectives that we have, even in dating, it being a little bit, it can be challenging sometimes for men to handle a woman that's really, you know, straightforward about, you know, her experiences, has really big opinions, strong opinions. And it's been definitely a test to like, okay, so how much do you believe this? How much are you willing to risk for this belief?
Yeah.
And so far, it's been everything. I'm willing to risk everything because of the response and the support that I've gotten from other women and just how I have evolved as a woman and a mother by standing in my truth. And my truth right now might not be my truth in 10 years.
And that's a thing. And I feel like the internet loves to play this game now where they're like, you said 10 years ago, you said you did not like cilantro and you're eating it on that pizza and we know you're full of shit. It's like, no, I mean, God, I hope that we're evolving so much that in an old book of mine, I wrote this and I feel like it gets to be my tagline forever that like, if you read another book of mine later, hopefully it's a totally different person. Hopefully, which is real. The most famous book I ever wrote, there's so many parts of that that I'm like, oh, I don't think that anymore because I was married. I was deep inside a patriarchy. I believed a lot of shit I don't anymore. The evolution looks different now. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it would be really easy to go, well, back then you told us this was, and I'm like, yeah, back then was 6 years ago. I don't have those beliefs anymore.
Mm-hmm. I'm not even the same bitch I was 3 months ago. I'm not.
Like, yeah.
I shift, I change, and we're allowed to do that.
Yeah. What is that? Is that like an active practice for you to reinvent?
I like to submit to the evolution, you know? And I think after I turned 30, I'm almost 35 next month, but after I turned 30, I was just like rapid change, rapid shift, rapid, like just there was rapid things happening and lessons, you know, hard lessons, same lesson, back to back. I'm like, am I dumb? I'm doing the same shit over and over.
Yeah.
And actually I heard a podcast where you said something and I was like, you're right, girl. And it was like, sometimes we make our lives harder.
Yeah.
And you're like, sometimes that's for months, sometimes that's for years. And I mean, and I'm like, yeah, I've done that, you know? And I think sometimes we talk about this in the book, is just like mothering ourselves. We are so used to mothering everyone else, nurturing everybody else, picking them up when they fall down. With your kid, if they fail, you know, the math tests all year long, you don't leave them.
Right.
You don't call them dumb.
Right.
You know, whereas with us, we're like, you're dumb, yeah. You know? And it's just like, no, you're just deprogramming and it's harder and harder, but it doesn't mean that you're not worth getting up and trying and wiping yourself off and doing it gently. So I think that it's a practice.
Yeah. I heard recently that the universe will keep putting the same lesson in our path, but the lesson's going to get harder every time. So it's like, just figure it out so you don't have to be back here again in 6 months.
Oh my God. That
speaks to me right now in my life.
Right.
But we've all been there. And yeah. that's why you get sharper. It's like when you're more in tune with your power, you're like, I'm not trying to fuck around with the universe, because last time I did that, I was in that relationship for 2 fucking years.
Right.
You know, I let that guy and his dog move in.
That stupid dog.
And I can't get that fur out the couch for the fucking life of me.
I told you not to let that guy move in with that damn dog.
But like, you know, it's just like, you know, as you get better, it's like, I'm not even going to play myself and go down this road.
Right. God, and we all do it too. We all do. Or have you ever, like, you're in the process and you're like, oh, fuck, I'm due right now.
Oh, yeah. I've done it. Like, I'm going to make a bad decision right now. I'm like, this is so bad. I'll be right back.
Oh,
Erica,
man.
I know. I'll be back.
Is that, like, I keep hearkening back to the same question of, like, when did you develop that or how did you develop that? Because I know developing intuition is something my audience is really interested in. Mm. And I think for many of them, they feel very disconnected from their bodies. They feel very disconnected from that inner knowing or that wisdom. So are there practices or techniques or habits or rituals that have really helped you to like grow that connection?
There's one, and I actually share this in my book, and it's about talking out loud without an audience. And actually, like, just recording. You don't have to record it, but sometimes it is nice to hear yourself talk back, because you're like, do I actually believe that? Mm-hmm. And I hear my own voice saying this thing. Talking out loud has been obviously transformational for us in our show, but you don't have to have a podcast to talk out loud. So I think that has been one. I think, you know, tapping into your pleasure. For us, you know, we have most of our audience are mothers, and a lot of them feel disconnected from their bodies as well. And, you know, doing mirror work, looking in the mirror, talking to yourself, it can feel extremely uncomfortable and awkward. And you're like, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
You know, my therapist told me to do that, and she made me do it in front of her. And I was like, I hate you. I really hate you. But I went home and I did that because I was feeling really out of my body. You know, I didn't, after I had my daughter, you know, I gained 70 pounds in pregnancy, and, you know, the aftermath of after you have a child and you still look pregnant and, you know, I was just like, what is this body? Who is this? I hate it. I hate her. What? Like, she doesn't deserve to go shopping. She doesn't deserve new clothes. She can't go out, you know, like, I'll wait. And it got to the point where I was like, I can't keep waiting for this. And so, you know, mirror work has been, a big thing. You know, we talk a lot about masturbation on our show and like self-pleasure, which for a lot of women makes women feel uncomfortable. You might be listening in your car and be like, oh my God,
they said it.
Jimmy's in the car. But this is the time where you pause and you come back. But, you know, exploring your sexual pleasure singularly is really important.
Yeah.
As women, we have put our pleasure in the hands of other people very, very early on. I mean, your first sexual experience, a lot of times, like, you've never even like really explored your body, but this person has.
God, you're so right. Like, I never thought of that. You know, you're so right.
We have this exercise in our book too, where we ask the women to take a mirror to their vagina. And then, you know, that in itself, people are like, that's weird. And like, yeah, it is. If you've never looked at it.
If you've never looked. Yeah.
But like, guess what? Charles looked at it. So did Eric.
Yeah. Remember in high school? Like, they saw
you know?
That.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, why do they get to look at it but not the owner?
Yes.
Like, learn to love yourself. And like, I think when you start really like getting into your body and just really, there's, a confidence that just exudes
yeah.
in all areas of your life. And, you know, that has been really transformational for me because I was a promiscuous young woman because, I mean, you could talk, you can chuck it up to daddy issues. You can chuck it up to I was just hypersexual. I don't know. But I did. I left my pleasure in the hands of other people. And it did its number on me, wondering if I was worthy, wondering if I was good at this. Does it feel good? Is it like, do I feel good? Did I even experience any pleasure in that interaction? And so when you start to kind of dive in and understand what it is, what do I like? What does my body react to? I think is just a small, there's so many things to tap into your intuition. But I think as women, like our pleasure is often the last thing on the list.
Absolutely.
And that can be in food, sex, whatever it is, time alone. But yeah, those are things that I think that have helped me tap into my intuition.
I also feel like pleasure, to experience it, requires us to slow down, mm-hmm. to move with intention, to even know what is pleasure for you in the first place. Sexual food, like all of these things that make you feel so good. I was dying laughing. My daughter's six. And she did that thing that teachers love to do in school for Mother's Day where they fill out the form. Like they ask her about mom, and mm-hmm. then she fills it out. And one of the questions was, mommy's favorite way to relax was to lay on a heating pad. And my teenage sons were like, oh, she did you dirty though. Like she told everyone in school. But it is 100%. I was like, no, she knows me. So I love hot. I mean, obviously this room's 1,000 degrees right now, but I love heat. I think I was a lizard in a past life. I want to lay on a hot rock. It sounds so stupid, but no, anybody who knows me knows it's the simplest fucking thing in the whole world. Do you know how easy it is to make me happy? Give me a heating pad. But like, I know it's so silly. There's a handful of those things that like, it's a visceral response in my body, like fuzzy slippers and yes, and sex, and yes, and like a great glass of wine and chocolate and whatever. But that took me slowing down enough to ask what brings me joy? What is a simple thing that brings me joy that I can access at any moment so that I can practice self-care? Not on a Sunday, not once a month, because that's what I'm supposed to do, but because I'm going to do little things for myself throughout the day because I love me. I know a heating pad was not the sexy
talk. No, but it is. But I think it's really just about activating the senses and starting there. Like that's that basic. Like, what do you want your house to smell like when you come home? That is like activating your pleasure. What do you want to taste, you know, every morning? What do you want to listen to in the car on your ride home, on your ride back from work? Like it's really fine tuning what those are and asking those questions. I think that's a good place to start when you're trying to figure out how to find your pleasure instead of it being this daunting big thing. And, you know, there's a lot of conversation about self-care. And we've talked about this a lot on the show, is that a lot of what women do and call self-care is actually aftercare. It's like reacting to something harming you.
Yes.
So you're now taking care of yourself and putting a Band-Aid over something.
Okay, that's good.
You know, and you're not really, this isn't self-care.
You're right. Because that would be more preventative. That would be, what's the morning routine? How are you filling up your cup? What are those rituals that are like giving you life so that you can pour out into the people that matter? Mm-hmm. That's such a good point.
And yeah. I think sometimes for a lot of women too, like we access our pleasure through other people. So if your marriage is good or if your husband is pleasing you or whatever, like you're having sex, but it's like when it's time to touch yourself, you're like, what do I do? You're like, wait, come on, Johnny. Like, you figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, how the fuck is Johnny supposed to figure it out if you haven't even figured it out?
Yeah.
You know, and I think, like, even women have, like, a hard time with nudity and even alone. And it's like, well, if you have a hard time looking at yourself alone, what does that mean? You know, like, are there parts of you that you are not acknowledging, like, just spiritually, emotionally? Because if that's, like, if you're hiding from yourself physically, what does that look like? And I just think, like, sometimes we rely so much on other people to bring us happiness.
Yes.
That we don't really tap in. And, like, I'm in Tantra school right now.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. And shout out to the Authentic School of Tantra. But One of the things is having a pleasure journal, and it sounds super, super simple. And it's like, what was your pleasure scale emotionally, sexually, sensually, like, and all these, and you're like, isn't that the same shit? You know, and you're like, and then I sit there and I'm like, oh my God, do I not know what makes me pleasurable? And it's like sometimes, and this is an example and I won't forget it. And she's like, I was at a resort and I was a little bit cold, but I was reading and I wouldn't just ask someone to bring me a blanket because I felt like I was asking for too much. And I was at an 8. I was really happy. I had a visually beautiful setting. I was feeling good, but I was just a little bit cold. And I really hesitated to ask for a blanket or to get up and go get one. And I was like, how often do moms and women do this? I do this shit all the time.
Yep.
Like, even if someone's laying on me and it hurts, I'm like, I'm just gonna let them lay, you know, because it's your kid or because it's your lover. Yeah. But it's like, we are so disconnected from our own pleasure that it's foreign to us. Our voices are foreign to us. And it's like, it really requires practice and like noticing like, hey, you know. And even I had a friend tell me once, I wrote about this in the book, and he's like, isn't it amazing, darling, that we can move in this life? Like, imagine just being a spirit and not being able to touch things and like smell things and how the food tastes. And I was like, he's right. This food does taste good. You know, like I can move my body, you know, and it's just like these little things that we take for granted that actually, you know, like I love sitting. I love like sunbathing. Yeah. It's like my favorite thing. And yeah. It's like so easy, you know, yeah. Like just like wear a little bikini and go lay in the sun.
Right.
And, you know, people will go, 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 go all day and not gift yourself with the things that actually bring you pleasure because you're so gung-ho about giving everybody else what makes them happy.
Yeah. Probably at the mid 2020 when we were all trying to figure out our lives and what the hell we were doing and we were trapped at home, I got into yoga for the first time. And I was someone who for my entire life, adult life, had been like, this is not for me. It's too slow. I don't like it. I have ended up loving it for a lot of reasons. But one of the side effects I was not anticipating was so much more confidence in my body, not because my body changed, but because I was not wearing a lot of clothes. I was looking in a mirror and I was watching my body do things that I thought were strong. Mm. And just that simple, like there's the line of my breast, there are my hips, like I feel like my body, I feel like a woman, I feel like all of these things, right? It really changed weirdly how confident I felt to be naked. I can't remember who just said that. I grew up in a really strict religious home. Mm. And so I had a lot of issues around being a good girl and being polite. I was very much a prude. I was the person that I'm a grown-ass woman. I would go to a gym locker room and like go change in the bathroom stall because I didn't want other women to see my boobs. It's so weird. But that is just worth saying because I think it was just this daily practice of looking at my body, of looking at the shape of my body and how it lined up and all of those things really helped me. And then having a partner who he would live naked if he could. He just is not, he wears clothes because he has to. And we first started dating. When we first started dating, and he would just, I would be like, what? We're just, oh, you're just, you're there you are. You're still, but at, I, he used to laugh, he's European. So he would laugh at me all the time, like, oh, American.
It's true.
That this is, and over time, it would be like, now I'm topless. And he'd be like, good, this is great. Look at you go. And slowly but surely, his body confidence and how much he loves his body and then loves my body is what really, not that we always have access to a partner who's super body confident. But
it's contagious.
Yeah, it really is contagious.
And I mean, I think Mila has also helped me with my body confidence. Obviously, if you're watching this, I don't know where you stream YouTube. You'll see me and Mila are very different body types. She's petite, very petite. I'm more curvy. And because I struggled with, you know, gaining weight in pregnancy and honestly, like borderline body dysmorphia most of my life, wanting to model and act as a kid growing up in LA, I felt insecure. I felt like severely insecure, although people you meet might be like, you're not insecure. And I'm like, oh, you have no idea. Mm-hmm. But meeting Jamila and just how she was so confident with her body, her nudity, the way she moved made me be like, it almost gave me permission. And when you were talking about the yoga thing, I think, you know, sometimes, have you ever noticed, like, sometimes you'll work out for like 2 days and you're like, I'm better now. I got like I got a little skinny. You bitch, you didn't get skinnier.
Yeah.
Not yet. Not that fast, but you thought you think you have because you're slowly connecting back to your body whether that's you want on a treadmill for 20 minutes for 2 days and you feel like, you know, oh my God, I see some definition. And that's crazy. And that's really let you know how your mind plays so many tricks on you.
Yeah.
You can't trust your mind.
Yeah. Not that play tricking. You're not skinny.
You can't.
Not yet.
You can't. You have to connect to yourself in ways that, you know, I feel like moving your body is really, really an important one. You don't have to masturbate to connect to your body. You can just go for a walk. You can go for runs or you can do yoga. But either way, there's a movement that has to happen.
Yeah.
You're not going to connect to your body sitting at home, reading blogs and listening to podcasts.
Yeah.
I want you to listen to this and then I want you to go do something.
Yeah.
You know? Listen so while you hype.
Well, and I don't know if you guys find this in your audience, but often with the moms in my audience, they struggle to do something for themselves, but they will do something for themselves if they can tie it into the fact that they will be able to better show up for their child. So if nothing else, listening to this at 40 or 30 or 25 or whatever age moms are listening to this conversation, save them time. Save them 3 decades. Save them the amount of time that it took you to get to this place where you realize there is an issue and you need to do some work to unpack your shit. Don't give that to them. Because I remember when I was pregnant for the first time praying that it wasn't a girl. Because I remember thinking, I was 24 when I got pregnant, and I was like, I am not enough of a woman yet to teach someone else how to be a woman. Please let this be a boy.
Oh my God. Thank God I didn't have that. Like that. I'm glad I was dumb as hell. You were smart. You're really thinking big picture.
I was like, I don't know what I'm doing.
I was just like, I'm in love. Yeah. I know everything I can teach you the world.
Right.
I mean, I think that kind of showed up after I had my daughter and I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
I saw a meme once that said, I walk around in front of my daughter often because I never once heard my mom praise her body in front of me.
Mm. Like naked?
Yeah. Naked. I read someone saying, I'm always naked around my daughter because when I was a child, let me lie about the quote. But it's like, but now I'm aware of it because I talk kindly to my body and I do it often. So my child knows what it looks like for a woman to love her body.
Yes. I do that. I mean, I don't know if I said that, but honestly, that's.
No, it is a post.
But I know, but I think I've said that on the podcast though too, because my mom is beautiful. But she's always talked so much shit about her body and her beauty and her looks. And it was always confusing to me as a child because I looked at her and I was like, what is she talking about? But then I adopted that. I started to adopt that as I got older and my body started to mature. And like, you know, you want attention from boys or whatever. And I realized, oh my God. And I would talk about, oh, I'm fat. I feel fat or this or that. And now with my daughter, it's like, I'm probably extra with it because I want to make sure. And now, and I see it show up because she's really, really confident. But sometimes you have to like kind of like be extreme. And when you have a child, it's almost like a state of emergency.
Yeah.
Like it's like, oh my God, we got to get it together. Like, oh no, 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 no. At least it should be. At least that's how I feel. And thankfully, you know, being able to have this relationship with Jamila and be able to talk to so many women like you and other women has really, I think, expedited that process and that understanding of like, oh no, we have got to make sure that these little girls and these little boys understand and get it. So they're not in therapy. I mean, yes, they're gonna be in therapy.
We're
gonna fuck up our kids
in
no
a
matter
totally
what.
Different way than we can think. Even imagine.
I always say that I'm like, the thing you think it's gonna be, it's not gonna be.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Totally. It's gonna be totally different. How you said your daughter's confident and that like an alarm went off for me because I have a 6-year-old who is extremely strong willed and loud and doesn't fuck around and has gotten in trouble so much her kindergarten year. And I have a lot of theories as to why, but a big piece of it is she's just a big personality. And I'm really struggling with how to have her in a school system that has an idea about how a little girl's supposed to be and not wanting to crush that in her. Because I'll get a note home, they're like, you know, Noah choked out a boy at recess. And I'm like, what'd the boy do?
Right.
And she's like, well, he was pushing me. And I'm like, well, that tracks. I mean, good for you. She has 3 older brothers. She's not going to mess around. So having a confidence, like, does she does the school love that? Do they celebrate it?
Well, my daughter's also a rule follower. So I haven't encountered those things. It's so funny. She's super confident, but she's also a rule follower, which drives me crazy because I'm not.
Oh, you're not a rule follower.
No.
So, I mean,
I follow certain things that I'm like, I just would rather not deal with this. But for the most part, like even when I'm parking outside in a red to just hop out and pick, like get something out of the, like go to UPS or something, she's like, we cannot park here. The police are going to come. Like she's like literally have a panic attack. I'm like, girl,
yeah,
it's fine. Okay. We can. I'm like, I said so. And I'm like, this is going to be her trauma and therapy. My mom making me do illegal shit. But I think, I mean, what your reaction is probably the best thing for her is that she gets that, she gets affirmed at home. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, you can always consider her putting her in a different type of school and all those things. But inevitably, the world is going to do that to her anyway. This is almost like training her to like really test her and say, like, is this who you are? Okay, then be that.
Yeah.
Because the world is going to tell you you're too much and tell you you're too loud. And mom is always going to be here to say you're not. And mom is going to fight anyone around in her space that she has, family members who try to like belittle her. No, I'm curating something really important here. So either you get on board or get out, you know? And that's how you have to kind of have to look at motherhood. Yeah. Like, sorry, like we're doing this over here. I don't know what you're doing with your kids, but school is a scary thing. It's funny you mentioned that because it is. It's like you send kids to school and now my daughter's in second grade going on third grade and like, you just don't know what other parents are doing and how they're teaching their kids too. Yep. And how like, and you're kind of at the mercy of just hoping you've instilling these things so that your daughter doesn't succumb to someone else's parenting style that you didn't sign up for.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge reason. It is the reason we're moving back from Austin. Mm. So I grew up in Southern California. We moved to Austin 5 years ago and everybody they go to school with looks the same, dresses the same, acts the same, has the same religion. Like it's all the same person. Mm-hmm. And that's also in its own way, I think, really dangerous because that's not what life looks like. That's not what the world is.
Listen, me and Mila are two Black women that grew up in the Valley. I know if you're listening, you might be shocked because everyone always says, you don't sound Black. I'm like, I don't know what that means. My experience as a little Black girl always being in white spaces. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, granted, there's been access to things that maybe typically I wouldn't have gotten access to. And like I've been able to dream really big early. Because of that, because of just being adjacent to privilege, then there's also been things that have contributed to my lack of confidence, even in my body. Like I've had a very mature, curvy body early,
right.
Going to school with a bunch of other kids that, you know, are skinny or like, you know, just haven't come into their womanliness. Not that you have to be Black for that to happen, but that was one of the things that that affected me or like, yeah,
hair just texture.
Just not, yeah, not seeing yourself in certain spaces can definitely contributed to my insecurities as an adult. So even my daughter now, as a young Black child, it was really important for me that she have a diversified school experience because I did not have that at all.
Yeah,
and the confidence that she has is a big part of that. Is that she sees her teacher right now at her private school is a Black woman. Yeah. Her kindergarten teacher was a Black woman. She has multiple friends in her school. Like the school that she goes to does a really, really good job at making sure that diversity is really important. And that was really important to me because I was like, I'm not going to do that to my child.
Yes.
Oh my God, that scares the shit out of me.
Yeah.
My kid goes to the school that I went to when I was in elementary school and there's still only like 3 Black kids there. I'm like, 30 years later.
it's so real though. Noah is adopted. She's half Black, half white. And she is, every other girl in her class is blonde and does not look like her and doesn't act like her. And that was also this huge thing is like, she's not going to look around. There's nobody. She has aunties here who understand and get it and whatever, but I don't have that in Texas.
Right, that tribe.
She doesn't have anybody that looks like her around her, and it's normalizing that vision for her of like, this is what it is to be the pretty girl. This is what it is to
be. Oh my God. Yeah. My interpretation of what was beautiful was definitely not me.
Well, like representation matters. And I know people are like, you know, like there are people this or there are people that. And I had a thing with my friends, you know, growing up in the Valley, most of my friends growing up were not Black. And when I had my daughter, I told them, don't buy my daughter any dolls that don't look like her.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, like, Mila, you're tripping. It's not that big of a deal. And I was like, you may not think it's a big deal because open up any magazine and you see yourself.
Yep.
Look on any billboard, pick up any movie, you're going to see yourself mm-hmm. and the European standard of beauty. But when you're a child, you are subconsciously, they're so impressionable and their visuals are so prominent. And you already have like the Disney movies yep. and like, and I was almost appalled at their obliviousness.
Yeah.
And I just realized, like, of course you're oblivious because you've never had to be the minority. But even for me, like, I went to predominantly white schools or non-black schools up until 12th grade, and then I went to HBCU. And even I was culture shocked. I was like, what the fuck? There are so many black people. And I was like, am I a racist? but then there's also this, like, after I got over that, because I was so taken out of my, you know, my environment, then I was like, guys were talking to me. And I was like, oh, you're talking to me? Oh, you think I'm fine?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Me? You know, and so there's just like this, you know, and I've always been really heavily instilled into who I was and, like, you know, being black and being beautiful. And there was a time where I remember the first time I experienced racism in kindergarten. And, you know, a boy, like, brought it up to his, and I was like, oh, I'm black. Like, it's this, like, I had to tell my friends, like, there's never been a moment in your childhood where you had to realize you were white.
Yes.
You know, but, like, yeah. when you're a person of color in a predominantly white space, yeah. there will be a time and a young age and you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's never, when you realize that, it's rarely, like, because it's a positive thing. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like you have to take yourself out of your comfort zone to kind of recognize when people are having different experiences than you, especially for, you know, women raising children of color. Mm-hmm. And, like, thankfully you're, like, aware enough to be like, oh, hold up. Yeah. Wait, this is yeah. going to fuck this you up if I don't yeah. get you out of here.
Yeah.
But it's true. Like, what's beautiful, what you read, what you see, how you speak to your child about their hair and about their skin and about how beautiful they are, yes. even boys too.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just, it's so, so, so important. And I think that really does start with, like affirming yourself. Like, yeah. do I feel good? And then you can give that gift to your child. And, like, even our kids are so smart. Kids are so fucking smart. They're like little babies from Jesus. Literally. And sometimes even when I'm not feeling beautiful, Luna's like, you're breaking out, but you're so beautiful, mommy. I'm like, I am. You think so?
You
know?
Thank you.
Or, like, sometimes I've told her, like, you know, we walk around naked and she had mentioned something to her dad, and I had to tell her, I was like, listen, everybody's not super comfortable being naked. And she's like, why? It's natural. I was like, I'm so happy she knows this. And I was like, everyone's just not comfortable in their body, babe. Maybe you don't need to tell Nana we went to the nude beach. I was like, just don't mention it because they're not going to get it.
Yeah.
She's like, okay. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it's like, I always tell people, like, as mothers, we have this amazing gift to be like, raise little Buddhas
yeah.
or like one less asshole in the world.
Yeah.
And it's just like, even sometimes I'm like, get the black doll. And she's like, mom, everything doesn't have to be black. And I'm like, I know, but she looks like you, yeah. you know? I'm like, yeah. am I going too hard? Like, you know, like this constant gauge, but like having a diverse group of friends, you know, and like,
yeah, even that we have, is key.
We have gay friends. Yeah. We have this. And I remember one time she was little and she was playing with two Barbies and she just looked up. She was like three. She looked up at me and she's like, mom, can two women get married? And I was like, yeah. She's like, oh, okay. You know, and it was just that easy.
Yeah.
Or I saw, ran into a friend, he was wearing a dress and she was like, why are you wearing that? I'm like, why are you wearing that? Because he likes it.
Right.
Wear whatever you want. Let this man wear whatever he wants, yes. you know? And it's just like these simple little things that we could just like plant seeds of kindness and acceptance, you know, and then that will go into their confidence. Like, I can wear whatever the fuck I want because my mom said so.
Yeah.
You know?
When my oldest son came out, and we all knew he was, but when he like officially came out, I put him in a group text with all of my friends who are queer. And it was the most beautiful, like just celebrating the hell out of him. Mm. Like, I never would have had this courage at 14. Like, we love you so much. It's so amazing. And that he instantly had, I mean, these people were already in his life, but he instantly had this community
yes.
of older people. It was amazing. And you said the having friends around you. I have one of my best friends lives here, and all my best friends live here. but one in particular, I'm so excited because she had her son. He'll be 2 in August. And I would come and see him and I would come for his birthdays and whatever, but I haven't been here. And she's pregnant. She's like, girl, I'm like 100 weeks pregnant right now, but she's pregnant with her second son. And I'm like, oh, this baby, like, he's going to know me because Micah doesn't really know me, but this baby's going to know me because I'm here. And we had invited them over to swim when we got the house, and my daughter's gorgeous hair, like so curly, and it takes, it's like a 45 minute situation. She's getting in the pool to wash and do and all the,
I know,
like,
it's a thing. It's a commitment.
Right.
Getting in the pool is you're committing to the aftercare of the hair.
So I was like, oh, you know, afterwards, and I was trying to make dinner and I'm doing all the things and I started working on Noah's hair and then I had to go do something else and I came back. I'm on my period, so this is going to make me cry. I came back and Rosie's black. So I came back and she was just doing Noah's hair and I was like, oh my God, like, okay, it's this one. And then she was like,
I got this.
Because I just don't, to me, I'm like, oh, this is just this thing we figured out and whatever. And she's like, her son has beautiful curly hair. And she's like, bitch, like, you think that happens by itself?
Right.
And she just did Noah's hair. And it's like a mom showing up for another mom, but also in a way that Noah's seeing herself reflected in the, it was such a gift. And she's obviously known Noah her whole life, but like we haven't lived in the same town. So we haven't had that like in our life person who's here and you see, and it was just like the most amazing thing. And if you don't have people in your community, every fucking kind of person in your community, your real life, if you're not the person who's saying hi to everybody and walking down the street and being open to that, you're going to surround yourself with a whole bunch of people who look exactly like you and act exactly like you and think exactly like you. And you're going to be in the same spot 10 years from now doing the same shit. There's no growth.
And that affects your children too. Yeah. And like, that's such a gift that you're going to give Noah.
Yeah.
And the gift of Rosie and really seeing herself and your friends. It's so important.
Yeah.
And you need that too. You need that support as well. Because I think about my mom too. My mom's Mexican and she's Mexican and a bunch of other stuff, but not black. And so growing up, like my hair was a thing. I remember I was looking at my yearbook and I could see like the progression of like my hair and how it got better with time. And my mom's only listened to this and be pissed because she's like, I knew how to do your hair, Erica. Because my mom's she's a professional makeup artist and, you know, luckily she could tap into her community like, yo, what the fuck do I do with this? She has a dread in the back of her head, you know, and being able to lean in to her friends. But it took a while for her to kind of figure it out. And I think she didn't even realize even just the seeing myself and how important that was. She just wanted me to have the best opportunities. So she put me in the best schools that she could and the best, you know, circles that she could. But then there was a level of me, like, I remember, like, I was in private school here, a very prestigious private school, very not diverse. Maybe it's changed now, but we had, like, a dance. We went to, like, it was an all-girls school, so we had a dance somewhere else, and there were boys, and there were black boys, and they went to, like, Loyola High School, where there was a lot of other black boys. And I, like, it wasn't even about the boys. I was just like, hey, take my number. And I like made friends with these people and they've been my friends ever since, but I would make my mom and she was really supportive. And I was like, mom, I need you to drive me out to LA. Like I was going out to LA every single weekend to go hang out with these people that didn't go to my school because I was like something, I needed that.
Yeah.
And it's something she didn't even know I needed.
Right.
You know, and I think a lot of parents that have mixed children, they don't think, they're not even thinking that broad. They're just like, well, I have this child and I'm going to give her the best opportunities. And we all know that the best opportunities are given to a certain type of person.
Yep.
So, you know, you can still give them the best opportunities and enrich their lives and make sure that they have a connection to their culture and people that look like them. Yeah. You have to make an effort though.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I could talk to you guys forever.
I know, this is so fun.
But I'm literally sweating.
I'm sweating
through my clothes because Jack's insisting that the AC not be on. This was amazing.
Thank you.
I hope you guys will come back.
For sure.
You will be my real life friends.
Yeah, we'll come back. Get in that pool.
Great.
You have to tell us
twice. Right now we
have 8-year old daughters.
Yes.
Too.
Yeah. Perfect. So, yeah. Perfect. The book is out. The podcast is like, tell listeners, where can they find everything? Where can they follow you? Give them all the details.
Well, the book is called A Good Mom's Guide to Making Bad Choices. And, you know, if you're a mother or thinking about having children or just a woman, like there's a lot of books out there about how to take care of your children, right? How to take care of a toddler, an infant, preteen. we wrote this book for you. It's about how to take care of yourself after you've gone through a major transition. We share a lot of very deeply personal stories. We get really raw, but it's a page turner. But I think that the point is for you to step away with tools and to feel excited and activated to figure out who the fuck you are.
Yeah.
What am I outside of a mother? Like, yeah. I kind of like that other version of myself. How can I get back to that? Or what does she look like now after kids? It's really the book I wish I had, because I really fell into the trap. Yeah. So this is to untrap you.
The book to untrap you.
The book to untrap you. And that's available anywhere you buy books, Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, whatever. You can find our podcast, Good Moms, Bad Choices, anywhere you listen to podcasts. Make sure you check out our retreat. We actually have a retreat coming up in Mexico, July 5th and July 12th. We have two different sessions, two different groups, in Sayulita, Mexico, nice. Which is called The Magic Pueblo, Pueblo Mágico. And it's really such a beautiful experience. If you need to be nurtured and taken care of and you need a break, this is your invitation. This is your excuse.
This is your sign.
It's summertime. Drop the kids off at grandma's or dad's or figure it out.
And if you want to see more juicy, uncensored content, you can go to patreon.com/goodmomsbadchoices.
And Instagram for you guys?
Good moms underscore bad choices.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is awesome.
I appreciate you. Yeah. I really enjoyed this.
Oh my gosh.
The Rachel Hollis Podcast is produced by me, Rachel Hollis. It's edited by Andrew Weller and Jack Noble.